Hello.
Hello, how are you?
A little bit stressed, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. Although I'm a bit nauseous, because guess what happened to me? Because this is all about me. So I've been up since, I'm in Malta at the moment. I've been
Yeah,
up
I know.
since.
You did text me at like 4 in the morning saying some airport smells like you. I was like,
They did, and it was so nice. In fact, it distracted me so much because they were in your perfume that I forgot my suitcase and I had to go back for it. So I've been up since 3:30, but I'm really realizing today it's partly like being with someone else and just having a really long day, like physically how much food I need and how hungry I am. It's constant, and this is the first time I've traveled abroad, I think, since being pregnant, and it's interesting. I'm finding like the body pressure interesting, like people just constantly looking at me. I find that I feel very uncomfortable. I feel like I store a lot of my body fat, like in my arms and my back, like that's just what I do. That's always been the case in my arse. And I feel uncomfortable. And so we went out for some food and stuff. And we were going past the shop and I was like, I need to get snacks. Like I need to get snacks. I started to get that shaky way that I get, as you've seen. And we went and so I got some, they got really random stuff in the Maltese shops. And so we got crisp fruit and then like this protein rice pudding, which I normally love, a random brand. Came back, ate a bit of everything, had my protein rice pudding. I was like looking at the label and I was like, this is a month out of date, a month out of date. And it's got egg in it, it's got cream in it, it's got rice in it. And then so that I finished that about an hour-ish ago. And now I'm kind of like, am I nauseous because of the placebo effect? Am I nauseous because you're really not supposed to eat out of fishy food when you're pregnant? And now I'm like, I'm annoyed because I'm having to eat so much. And I'm annoyed that the stuff that I have eaten is out of date. And I'm in Malta. So this is such a first world problem. And I'm not like, I recognize the first world nature of it, but I'm just like, oh, so it's an interesting, I'm nauseous. And it's an interesting experience. It's my first day abroad.
I have had that before where I ate something and the chicken looked a bit raw, and I was like, just waiting to see if like something bad would happen. And it didn't. But I was like, oh, am I feeling sick? And there was always that, like, maybe I'm not. And anyway, yeah, I was okay.
Okay, well, maybe I'm sure I'll be fine. But obviously, then because I'm feeling nauseous and I'm worried about it, I'm like, oh, just have some dry carbohydrates because in pregnancy, that is the answer to nausea. And then I'm just snacking some more. And then I'm like, that's not helping me. That makes me feel even more sick. So I'm just getting very irritated with myself. But it's again, feeling nothing, not a big deal. Have you read anything exciting this week?
Yesterday I was listening to something that was talking about dressing inappropriately for an occasion, right? And it did remind me, like, the reason I wanted to talk to you about this is
Because
because
it reminded me of you.
it reminded me of you. No, this is so rife in academia, right? The professors will usually dress down, and like someone who's, like, I don't know, maybe a lecturer, but isn't like of that level yet, has to, dress smart to go to uni. But it's almost like, anyway, this study was looking at how people are perceived and how if you purposely make that decision to dress down, you're seen as higher status. But if you've just done it because you've misjudged the situation, you're seen as lower status. But you'll notice this like at conferences and stuff. Normally it'll be like, oh God, that's the guy who, I don't know, discovered the AMPK pathway and he's like fucking dressed in. I shouldn't say that. You can actually see who that is. But anyway, he dresses down, let's just say that, right? And as you look at like Mark Zuckerberg, who just like dress, like wears sandals and shit, but he can because he can not say. And whereas you wouldn't like rock up to a professional job looking like that if you didn't have the status behind it.
Do you think the same, it's all gendered, or do you think it's more men?
I
Because
reckon mum gets away with dressing a bit scruffy.
I was gonna say my mum's very glam. I wonder if it is the same. I can't imagine your mum being scruffy, but I haven't seen that.
not like, I wouldn't say scruffy is not the right word, right? But like, she doesn't feel the need to dress up.
Like we, like us.
Yeah. Yeah, like her.
Just like us. We intentionally choose to dress down.
Yeah, guys, I purposely choose not to have like anything designer or anything flashy because it's a status symbol.
Yeah, I like that. I like that a lot. I purposely choose to never wear makeup really on anything that I do, despite my New Year's resolutions to try. And it's a status thing.
Yeah, so I would do it, but actually I purposely like don't dye my hair very often and don't particularly brush it or make any effort.
We're great. We're great. We're just top class status. That's what we are.
Oh, there you go. And what else did I read this week that was interesting? Not a lot. I read a little bit more about side effects of Ozempic and whether there were any that were particularly scary. And to be honest, it's not that much yet. I mean,
pregnancy part.
Huh?
The pregnancy part. Was it not on this podcast we were talking about that?
What, increased pregnancy?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, because there might be a something to do with the pill and not working particularly well. And then the increased suicide risk, that was a bit scary. But also when you look at it in comparison to other things. So actually the headline I was looking at was like, you'll lose all your muscle mass, or wasn't that, but it was like, people who lose weight with Ozempic also lose a lot of muscle mass. And it's like, yeah, but when you compare it to people who lose weight, it's not that different. Like, it's the weight loss. Now, obviously, if you're resistance training and you're eating enough protein, you can mitigate some of that muscle wastage, but or muscle loss, but like, it doesn't seem to be significantly worse. And that was kind of like the whole like anti it was like, oh, people are just, or people say that you get this like really gaunt face, and it's like, it's not more gaunt than normal weight loss, you know, like, is it significantly worse? The only thing I found that was quite interesting was significant slowing of gastric, or not even gastric emptying, like digestion in general. So it does seem to be worse than, I can't remember what they compared it to now, potentially another weight loss method. Whether that causes significant complications or not, I don't know. But it's also probably partly the way that it's working.
Yeah. Interesting. More interesting than what I've read, which is not really much this week at all.
And what, there you go.
You can't do it all, you know? You just can't. Okay, I'm gonna get the questions. BRB. I did have them open, but we know how then Facebook likes to play games. Okay.
Do you know what? I'm starting another thread.
I'm here by the bottom. I made it.
But the next time.
Okay. The answer question. Hi both. I have a client who is lean with PCOS. She often gets lower backache, which is linked to her cycle, and lately has been more sciatica. Do you think there's a link between PCOS and sciatica? And why would that be? Through training, I am looking to strengthen her core and glutes as a focus. She's playing netball too. Is there anything specific that comes to mind for you? She is 40 and it has been occurring for a number of years now. Now and again, when it gets really bad, especially after tough matches, she may go and see a physio, sports massage therapist. So I looked into this a little bit more because I was interested. And there are links between PCOS and chronic pain, and one of the potential links, there are many reasons, but with when you experience PCOS, regardless of whether it's lean PCOS or obese PCOS, although I would imagine an obese type PCOS, this is greater. It is a pro-inflammatory condition, and you get changes in like C-reactive protein, which is a marker of inflammation. And one of the hypotheses with this kind of coexistence of PCOS and chronic pain is potentially this heightened inflammatory state contributing to the pain. Which I think is interesting, and that seems to be the leading hypothesis that at least I've been aware of. There are no studies specifically that look at PCOS and sciatica or low back pain, but logically makes sense. And you see it with the menstrual cycle, you see it with pregnancy. Pregnancy is obviously slightly different because you have an additional load, but that, you know, you can get like pain radiating throughout. And it makes sense if it's, I mean, again, it makes sense after like tough matches, of course, because of the exercise, but think about it, that is like a DOMS response, right? It's an inflammatory response. So it makes sense that this heightened inflammatory response contributes then to further back pain. So if anything, I would think less. I mean, it's a couple of things, because ice baths are potentially anti-inflammatory. So these are something that I wouldn't say, they're not helpful for muscle adaptation or like exercise adaptation long term. But if you're looking at like in the moment, you'll see some professional athletes, footballers and stuff, will have ice baths after a game if they've got another match quite soon after. That could potentially help dampen the inflammatory response. But day to day, I would also potentially consider, again, just dietary pattern on the whole. And no dietary pattern is going to be anti-inflammatory per se, but Mediterranean style diet, for example, would be the way that I would probably direct, just in terms of food choices and dietary patterns to consider.
Yeah, I always find it quite interesting because we know that inflammation accompanies like a lot of chronic diseases. But is it the inflammation that's causing the pain or the pain that's causing the inflammation? And when you treat the inflammation, do you treat the pain? And that's like that's a huge question, right? But that's kind of what people are figuring out. Like when I was working on chronic fatigue syndrome, that was essentially the question that we should have been asking. But I think it was kind of like too, I don't know, like mechanistic of, can we use this supplement, which was sulforaphane, to reduce inflammation in people with chronic fatigue? But it's like, was the inflammation the problem, or are you treating the symptom, not the cause?
Yeah, and I wouldn't even know how they would begin to unpack. Well, lots of studies, right? But yeah,
but it's interesting. For example, like if the sciatica, which to be honest, the sciatica is probably like a lot of people who struggle with this have flare-ups now and again. It may or may not have anything to do with her PCOS. Is the inflammation coming from the sciatica flare-up, or is the flare-up caused by the inflammation?
Yeah. And it
might still be good to reduce that inflammation.
Yeah, and then where's that coming from? Is it specific PCOS? Is it psychological stress? Is it lack of sleep? It's not going to be lack of movement by the sounds of things, but it's not. We often go to things like PCOS, or again, actually, to be fair, nutrition, for like the reason for things, when there's myriad other reasons or potential reasons for these things.
Great.
Hello, both. How can we identify the difference between telling a client, give in to the craving, or surf the urge? The type who tries to fight their post-meal sweet tooth chocolate craving with a yogurt and a bit of honey, then have an apple, then a handful of granola, then a bowl of granola and milk times three, then peanut butter, etc. Then feel terrible and give in to the chocolate anyway. When is it a case of it's okay to have chocolate if that's what you fancy? And when is it a case for surfing the urge?
I mean, the poison's in the dose here. Like, it would be great if they had any of those one things, but all of them is too much, right? Too much energy for one person's needs, or for this specific person's needs. I think, I mean, not to like diminish this question, but like a little bit of common sense, and maybe that does require for the client kind of putting boundaries in place there, like especially initially, and they'll get better at doing this for themselves. But, you know, like enjoy one sweet treat after dinner and then stop. And then after that, you're quote unquote surfing the urge. Like, you still fancy a bit more? Okay, let's surf that urge until the next morning. If you still want it, then sure, have it. But the likelihood is they won't wake up and want to overeat because they'll be busy doing stuff. Yeah.
I think noting like surfing the urge is like the way that surfing the urge originates, like it is a mindfulness technique, it's a distress tolerance technique. It's quite an advanced strategy to help manage overeating. Like it requires you not to distract yourself, not to eat something else, like not to go away and just come back and just go for a walk or whatever. It requires you to sit with the urge, notice the urge passing through, notice it ramping up, noticing it crashing down for about half an hour. And it's quite advanced, and it's quite, that's not something that I would just say to someone who came to me, started working with me 2 weeks in, and they were overeating. I wouldn't be like, okay, let's surf the urge. I might start with something like a distraction technique, but it is something to note. This is a clear case of saying what would have happened if you had allowed yourself to have the chocolate in the first place. Like this is like, it's not you saying, okay, in this specific example with a specific client, when they eat like this, they should do this. Ask them that, okay, interesting. Like you didn't allow yourself to have that chocolate and you found that you were overeating on other foods. What do you think would have happened if you allowed yourself to have that chocolate? And then they might say, I don't know, I could try it. Or they might say, oh, well, I would have overeaten because I would have just had all of the chocolate. Okay, well then can we try to have some of the chocolate pre-portioned out mindfully? Then maybe you distract yourself for half an hour and then decide if you want to have more and have a combination. There's no kind of hard and fast rules for these things. But I think there's kind of, wait, hold on, let me open the question again. There's kind of different things in this, in the sense of, actually, no, I'm not going to go down that road because it's kind of off on a tangent. If someone's feeling terrible because of what they've eaten, then again, it's a key indication of like, okay, what do we need to do differently? But again, just get curious about it. I wouldn't, there's no hard and fast rule with it. Okay. Oh, Annie's question. Hello, just wondering for a client who constantly compare their bodies to others when they're around other people, be it people they know well or don't know, e.g. I'm larger than everyone here, how would you go about supporting this body image disturbance in the moment and outside of these situations? I think outside of these situations is probably just like all of the body image work that I know that you will already be doing, Annie, because you talk about a lot of these things. And the more positive someone's body image is, the less likely they are to compare. I think some work around mindfulness is going to be really helpful here in the awareness of these things and choosing to be present rather than stuck in comparison. I don't think it's anything specifically novel to this situation. Like, I think it is body image can, like, when you have a negative body image or a less positive body image, it can feel very self-obsessive. It doesn't necessarily feel self-obsessive. It is quite self-obsessive, right? You're in your own head, you're stuck there, you're in the state of comparison. And I wonder if there's scope for doing some work around, like, getting out of her own stuff and out of her own head, whether it be out of her head and into her body or out of herself and into the world, as in like nature exposure is associated with a more positive body image and being outside and not being in nature and listening to podcasts about dieting, but like being outside and not listening to a podcast and noticing like the your insignificance in this world. There's some cool research around that. Or like altruism is associated with a more positive body image, like actually giving back, connection, social connections. And I wonder if there's an element, something we do at ETBHD is beauty hunting, which is like finding a glimmer each day, and our clients will take a picture each day, a natural glimmer, sunset, whatever it may be, and they keep folders in their phone, and it becomes like a lovely thing to start thinking about the beauty outside in the world. And so when they're in this state of like maybe previous comparison, they are looking outside at the beautiful surroundings and the experience rather than their own body or someone else's body. They're helping them get out of their head. So I'd maybe lean towards that stuff that's more outside of the situation.
So in this situation, is this like a social situation she's comparing herself to how other people look?
Yeah.
I think what might help, and I guess it's just a different technique of doing the same thing, is like, okay, what about a challenge? Like, what can I learn from each of these people? And then it's like, okay, and maybe you have some key questions, and it, maybe it does push yourself out of your comfort zone a little bit, and you're like, oh, I wouldn't normally ask people this, or, you know, what they do for a job, or what's one thing that they've read recently, or what's, you know, if you were giving one book recommendation, what would it be? What's the biggest impact, or where's your favorite country you've traveled to, or something? Like, have a list of questions. Like, everyone's interesting if you ask them the right question. And if you can get more excited about that than the way that somebody looks, then your life is just generally going to be better. But it's quite like a conscious thing that you can do in that moment is, okay, well, can I speak to someone here? And it might not have to be the person that you're directly comparing your body to, but can I, like, okay, what can I get out of this social situation? Like, what's going to be interesting? And people love sharing stuff that they're inspired by, or their favorite place that they've been, or one book that they've read, you know, something. You'll probably start really good conversations, and then your mind's getting away from, oh my God, I'm the biggest person in this room.
I like that a lot. I was out with a friend of a friend recently. Well, recently. Yeah. And we sat down at a bar, and he was like, what's the biggest thing you're working through right now? And I felt so uncomfortable because he was just talking about this big thing that he was working through. And that's fine. Like, it was a oversharey, but that was comfortable for him. And I was just like, I don't really know you that well. And it was one of those situations where I'm like, I feel like you've kind of conditioned yourself to ask these questions, maybe because you talk about yourself and you ask someone else about the thing, and it's a deep question, and that's amazing. And I was like, nothing. And I thought, I've never in my life sounded more shallow, maybe since I was like 18, than I did in that moment. And I know that I'm not shallow, but it was the pressure of like someone saying to you, what's the biggest thing you're working through right now? And I was like, read the room.
I really don't like that. I think it's like, you've not deserved that. That's why, yeah. I'm like, well, tell me about a place you've been or a book you've read. Not like, tell me your deepest, darkest secret. Like, and I like, sometimes people do this on dates to try and get like a bit of an it, like, oh, I don't know, tell me something you've not told anyone before. I'm like, I've literally just met you. Of course, I'm not telling you something I've not told anyone before. Like, and then it's forced intimacy. Mm-hmm. It doesn't, like, you need to earn that stuff. It's like, someone will open up. Those aren't the kind of questions you ask people.
Yeah. Those
questions that people feel like they can tell you, or like the information that people feel like they can tell you. That's why I'm like, go in with good questions. But I completely agree. It's one of my pet hates when people are like trying to force deep conversation. And you're like, you've not earned deep conversation.
Yeah.
Like,
watch that. I saw a nutritionist, a registered nutritionist, has released a gut supplement, probiotic version, and I really like her and I like her content, and I'm just a bit like, oh, again, I threaded whatever about it yesterday, did a thread. What is the verb of that?
Yeah, wait, I guess it is threaded. I threaded
about it.
I have to say, I posted on Threads.
Yeah, about it yesterday, and someone said to me, you're so right, this man agrees with you, and then linked me up to Tim Spector.
Oh no.
Like, how is that what's come out of this rant? But honestly, but so many people were like, it's outrageous that you would say that these supplements are not helpful. I have a leaky gut. And then it's like, I find it much cheaper to buy a supplement than I do to buy fruit and vegetables. And I'm like, go to Aldi. I feel like
that's not the point. Like, I think people think, oh, you do what? I'll just take this instead.
Yeah.
No.
Oh. So yeah, we lost another one this week. It's a sad time. They're dropping like flies.
Oh.
Okay. That was the last question.
Okay, well, good, because I'm excited to know who that was.
Oh yeah, okay. I don't know if you know who it is, but I'll tell you after.
Okay.
Keep your questions coming, everyone. We love them. Doesn't matter what they are, they're never stupid.
Great. Talk to you next week.
Bye.
Bye.